Gab, Alex, thank you so much for coming round again. How are you feeling this morning?
Good.
Yeah, good.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. Your album Body Break is out. Hectic time, I can imagine. What's going through your minds right now?
Nervous energy.
Yeah, definitely.
I would say, but keen for it to be out in the world.
Yeah, definitely really keen to have it out and play a bunch of shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so exciting. The first track on the album called If I Go. Walk me through, how'd you land on this track as the opener?
I think that we thought it kind of like captured what we're trying to go for in terms of, we liked obviously the song, but arranging wise, I think it's a bit like dramatic and has like a nice lush instrumental opening moment.
Yeah.
Which feels like we've done that
on all of
our albums. Yeah. We want to start with drama.
Yeah. And I think it also summed up a lot of the like themes across the whole album. I feel like we both decided that it was a song that felt like it kind of encapsulated a lot of the stuff on the album.
What is this song kind of about for you guys?
It was written about, at the time I had like some health stuff. I was getting a cheeky bit of surgery done. So I kind of just wrote it about being like, well, everyone, if it's over.
See you later.
But no, it felt like a quite a nice, maybe trying to lean into being like accepting of your circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel as like maybe doom and gloom as some of the other songs on the album. But yeah, that was kind of the starting point. And then, yeah, we worked on arranging it in a way that felt, I don't know. Blaine would always describe this song as sweet, which I think is kind of funny.
Mm. And you've picked a Fen Lily song, Map of Japan,
yeah,
to go along with this. How did you bring this together?
This album, like the same album that Map of Japan is on, is an album that we both have listened to a lot.
Rinsed.
especially in the lead up to making Body Break. So I think it was just kind of like a clear choice in terms of a lot of, like, I mean, not just specifically this song, like the entire album.
I think so much of our songs lyrically are pretty like blunt and a little like on the heaviest side. And then this album felt like the Fen Lily album, the arrangements were quite like light and almost like, I feel like pulled up some of the lyrical themes a little bit, which I feel like was a nice reference for us.
Mm.
Just so it wasn't like full, I don't know.
Full doom and gloom.
Full emo.
Yeah.
No, not emo, but you know what I mean?
Would you describe your music as emo? I'm curious. What would you kind of like?
I feel like if we described it as emo, like there would surely be someone that's like, that's not emo. I'd say it's just like, maybe it has a tendency to sit on the more sad side.
Mm.
Okay, well, let's jump into it. We'll jump into If I Go now and we'll play that family track after. Don't go anywhere. Next up, we have the track What You Really Meant. What does this kind of mean for you, this song?
I guess this one was kind of just like a classic breakup song.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
It's a classic.
Just a classic, you know, just a feel-good breakup song.
Yeah. Mm. This one felt like quite easy.
Bring on the good times.
In terms of like your songwriting process and like how you guys work together to pull these songs together, is it similar? Like, is it quite like formulated and like very like the same every time, or does it kind of differ?
I'd say it differs.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Usually, like, one of us will kind of write the basis of the song, like the lyrics and the chords and then the melody, and then we'll kind of workshop it together and get feedback and then work on the arrangement together.
Depending on maybe also who's written the bass. So if I've brought it in, the bass would be kind of done quickly. Like, I usually like to wrap songs pretty, like, within a good couple days. Mm. Like, I need this to leave my brain. But then it would be sat on for quite a while in terms of arrangement. It's nice if you have the opportunity to play songs live as well before you go in and kind of tweak it a little bit more. I think that's something that we've been doing.
Yeah, I feel like this one was fairly quick. It was like Gab's kind of brought the like, lyrics and the melody and the chords and everything, and then we played it duo and kind of were like, okay, well, this is the arrangement. Didn't feel like it needed a lot of things to be added to it.
Mm. Yeah, which is unlike us.
Yeah, that tendency to overdo things.
Normally it's like an over. Do you like, are you guys want to over design? Like,
oh, yes. Definitely. It's all about early demos. What nightmares. So much going
also,
on.
How would you like describe them?
Just doing too much. Yeah. Doing too much.
And you've picked some Adrian Lenker to go along.
Yeah.
How'd you land on this?
So this song, Evil, is, I guess, just kind of like similarly, just like kind of a sad, really pared back arrangement. And we both really liked the piano sound in the song and kind of wanted to recreate that on this song. We're both big fans. And
I think it's just a good example of like, you know, if you think the song is strong, like don't add so much that you're kind of redirecting the ears to additional things. Just trying to keep it pared back and chill.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump in. We'll be back in a sec.
I heard what you said. Now tell me what you.
So that was What You Really Meant by Beryl and Evil by Adrian Lenker. They are here in the studio breaking down their brand new album, Body Break. This next track, Shock Absorber, walk us through this process for this song.
We were actually just about to go in to record the album and then came up with this song, felt excited about it. Mm. I think we were like, yeah, it's like, has a bit of a foot tapper kind of energy, which we thought the album maybe needed. I'd say it came together pretty quickly. Like, it was, you know, easy to write about lyrically. I was kind of just trying to, like, write on the experiences of members in my family. Kind of just like an honest take, trying to explore, like, being grateful for, you know, people that come before you and stuff. For this single, there's a picture of my nan, one of my nans. And it's like her, like, kind of, like, just literally sitting on a couch with, like, a beer.
Classic.
Classic. And it then that kind of was the starting point. And then I wrote it more generally about, like, the women on both sides of my family. So both of my nans. Just a lot of staunch ladies. So, yeah, it was quite fun and easy to write.
Yeah, and it kind of was written, like, probably a week or two before we went to record.
Yeah, so probably one of the freshest ones.
Yeah.
Being the, like you say, you're, like, want to kind of overcomplicate. How did you know then when the album was kind of finished?
I mean, it's not a very romantic way to look at it, but I would say one of the main reasons as like a completely independent band is we only had a couple weeks booked.
Yeah, we had 3 weeks in the studio.
In a studio.
So once we ran out of time,
and a timeline and a deadline. And we were like, that's it. There's no more. There's certainly no more studio time.
Yeah.
And as well, you know, like, because you're, when you're an independent musician, like, you're also balancing, like, your day job work. Mm. And so, like, we also have deadlines so we can
go back to work.
Go back to work and, like, continue to, you know, like, earn money.
Yeah.
So that was definitely one of the main reasons.
Yeah.
And you've picked a Hannah Cameron song to accompany this one.
Yeah.
Walk Me Through, love her.
I mean, we're both really big fans of Hannah's music. And I guess it was, like, a similar thing where this song and a lot of this album feels like really live in the way that it's like recorded and performed. So that was something that we both wanted to emulate on a lot of the tracks on this album. So it felt like a fitting choice.
Mm. Well, let's jump in. This next track is Shock Absorber by Beryl.
Legs spread, sitting on the couch, beer in hand, cigarette hanging.
SCR. Beryl here in the studio breaking down their brand new album. Tell me about this next track, Unravel. I've already spoken to you about this so many times, but this was one of the tracks that like really locked me into you guys at Phoenix Central Park. There's a massive climax at the end of the track that I look forward to at every Beryl show. What goes into building a climax like that and making sure it kind of pays off?
Oh, this one was particularly funny because, Alex, why don't you explain how we achieved
how
this?
How I recorded the end of the song was pretty funny because I was actually conducting the end of this song, which pretty funny. I guess the end of the song is this big build, which just repeats and over again. And Gabs was singing and playing guitar, and Lauren White was playing bass, and Dom Corso playing drums, and they were all just in the room recording, and I just stood there, and everyone was waiting for me to cue the end of the song, and it was my job to not cue the end of the song.
So that really built a lot of tension for everyone playing.
Everyone was just like,
"Come on,
Alex, please let it end," and I was like, "No."
Yeah, so we just, like, I guess it meant that we just had to keep getting more intense and more intense.
Mm.
I think when we started recording it, we were like, oh, how are we going to kind of capture that energy? And then we tried it once with Alex conducting, and then Blaine was like, no, that's the thing that's going to make it hectic. And then it worked. It just meant that we didn't know when it was going to end. We kept having to push, and then the god of the unraveled world, Alex, was like, now it's time.
And the repetition at the end of this song, why was that something that you guys chose to do, like the repetition of that same line?
I feel like it's something that I tend to do when I write songs, is take a line and repeat it over and over again. Is it laziness? I love, like, a question in songwriting, like, in terms of just constantly asking, I guess, back at yourself the same thing. And I liked, I guess, specifically this line, because it is a breakup song, but it's, like, not quite yet a breakup. So it felt like a nice repeat to just constantly be asking, like, well, is it done? Is it done? Is it done? Mm. Essentially over and over again. I feel like it captures, like, the, you know, that, like, simmering end point of any relationship.
Yeah.
Mm.
I love that. And it's really visual in that sense. I think you can see that so clearly.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about that Phoenix Central Park gig in general. Mm. What was this venue like to play at? Because, like, watching it, obviously, it felt like almost the perfect Beryl venue.
It's a wild experience.
Yeah, career highlight for sure.
Yeah.
The team there, they're all so lovely.
Mm.
We played with a string quartet who we actually didn't really know any of them very well at the time, but it was like we all got along really well. It all just kind of like actually really came together it was dreamy.
Mm.
That gig, in a way, I would say, was a really great way for us to maybe realize that songs can kind of stand on their own with strings. No, but like, you know, there didn't have to be so much going on arrangement wise like, we had to commit to, like, we chose to commit to just like duo and strings. And I think that was really formative, I think, musically, and then going into the next album and being like, okay, well, it doesn't always have to be heaps happening.
And then we put heaps on this song.
Then we did put heaps on this song, so that's on Hypocrisy, I guess.
And I wanted to also mention that gig, I think you played one or two songs from Dry Pool Crack, which was your album that you had out at the time, and it was mostly new things. What point were you at in the process then with, like, pulling this album together and writing those songs? Like you said, you trial a lot of them before you, like, record them.
Yeah, we have a tendency to, like, once we've released whatever album we're working on, be collectively like, oh, well, let's do new stuff. I think because we play live a lot and we really value playing live, and I think that also tends to mean that you want to play new songs.
Mm.
But a lot of the songs, I guess, from Phoenix then ended up on this album.
Yeah,
right?
That was kind of the first time we played quite a few of these songs. A bunch of them we hadn't actually played live at all. But the ones that we did play at Phoenix, we had played with strings, and then we had done a bunch of gigs playing duo. And then kind of the band arrangements came afterwards.
Yeah, it's like we had more time to realise them as songs before arrangements, if that kind of makes sense. Because you're so restricted in a duo context, you know, like there's only so much juggling Alex can do on instruments. As same with me, like it's not like I can add any more really
than
guitar and voice.
It's one of those things that it was interesting to go to that gig and then go more regularly after that and then see the way that the form would change. The crux of the song would stay the same, but it was just fun to see all the different elements you incorporated based on who you had.
So I think that's something we both really love doing as well, is like playing to different rooms, different audiences, trying to you know, not commit to being like, well, the song is this always.
It's one of those things that you never like know, like walking into a barrel gig, like what you're actually going to get, even if you know the songs. Like you'd like, is it them? Is it a band? Is it strings? Like you just don't really know. And I think that's so sick.
Thanks.
So we'll move into the song you've picked to go along with this, some classic Mitski. Walk me through this decision.
I just like, I think this is quite an old Mitski song.
Mm.
It's really short. And I just thought lyrically, it was the best. There's so much I think we both collectively like about Mitski for this song in particular. I just really loved the lyrics. I'm such a lyric listener. So any artist whose lyrics I'm really obsessed with, they just like definitely inform any of the songs that I work on.
So we'll jump into it now. This next track is called Unravel. You'll hear it on 2SER. Don't go anywhere, breaking down the rest of the album till 10 a.m.
Feet on the dash. Didn't make it far, paid for petrol and cash.
We're chatting to Beryl about their brand new album, Body Break. This next track is called Echo Chamber, track 5. Walk me through.
I feel like one of the themes in the album is just like navigating different types of conflict. So that this is just like another classic conflict song, but this one was interesting. It kind of had so many different iterations in terms of arrangements, but we did land on this one. This was one of the like I think nightmare demos that we demoed a lot, and God knows what they sound like. But yeah, I picked the Charm You because I thought that like again, just like lyrically, she's someone that I really. Get a lot of like inspiration from, and so I thought it was a good fit.
So we'll jump into that now. This next song is called Echo Chamber, followed by Samia's Charm You. You're here on 2SER. We're talking about Beryl's brand new album, Body Break. This next song, Cold Touch. Walk me through, how did this song come to be?
This song was written about my grandma, actually, who passed away a couple of years ago.
Mm.
So she like had dementia as she was like dying, and it was kind of about how, I guess, how her personality changed over that time, and just watching that happen and kind of like dealing with that, and also just like family dynamics and that kind of thing that happened. I feel like this one, the songwriting kind of came together fairly quickly. I can't really remember how we got to the end point of this song.
It was originally on guitar.
I think it was originally on guitar, and then Gabs suggested it should be on piano. And you kind of...
Yeah, I thought it, because it's such a soft, gentle song, that it would be nice, really stripped back. I'm pretty sure the reference song I sent you, right?
Yeah, so the song that we kind of associated with this was Butter Knife by Prima Queen, which was a song that Gabs actually sent to me and recommended to me. And it kind of influenced a lot of the lyrics on this song, because it's like similarly... about losing someone to dementia and how, you know, that can kind of change a person.
And I also wanted to mention, in terms of like in general in the album, there's lots of religious imagery in like some of the lyrics, but also a lot of the visuals that you guys have been putting out in accompaniment with it. What part does like religion and stuff kind of play in this project?
Imagine if we were just like nothing,
nothing
just really
just looks cool.
Just looks cool. No.
Well, nothing for me.
Nothing for Alex.
I wasn't raised religious at all. But.
I was raised religious in like a very, I was like raised Catholic, but I guess in that very, what I feel is quite typically Catholic way, like you're kind of amidst a lot of not practicing Catholics, but in a very Catholic community, like Catholic school.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating backdrop to live with, especially because... you are a child. So it's an interesting thing to explore. I feel like it's just on my mind a lot. And like I have so much like religious language, like the way that I speak. It's just funny how like those things just end up like informing so much of like your like language and identity. And
yeah,
I'm often thinking a lot about that when writing. I'm not religious, but I definitely see the value in religion and the value of like what religion gives people.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about being raised Catholic that makes you pretty like not Catholic by the end.
No, literally.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump into it. This next track is called Cold Touch. You're here on 2SEL.
Lying on the bed, hospital sheets wrapped tight around your neck.
Merrily here, breaking down their brand new album. Very exciting. I wanted to talk about it. This album really like seeps of vulnerability at its core. Like, what is this collection of songs about for you?
I mean, I think all of our albums, I say having two, they're all of them. They're always just a capture of a certain period of time. Mm. And so I guess the year that it kind of captured was a particularly vulnerable time. I mean, we're both sensitive, so maybe we always feel vulnerable. Yeah. But at the time, yeah, there was a lot of like physical illness happening as a backdrop, and there was like grief and conflict, like interpersonally, with lots of, I guess, for both of us in different parts of our lives.
Hmm.
I mean, the album kind of just captures all of those situations. Yeah.
How does it feel kind of like listening to this back then, or even playing them live? Like, these are quite like vulnerable things for you. I know they're like a bit removed because they're in songs, but like, you're very good with your imagery and like the way you lay things out. It's very like kind of almost like a story. Having to go to an audience and play these songs back, and even listening to them back, how does that kind of, how do you feel about all of that?
It's a wild experience, I would say. It's definitely something that I've gotten maybe better at, as so far as, yeah, like when you play songs live that feel very fresh for you still emotionally, you do have to, I think, work on not going too far into the songs as you play them, just to not feel like, yeah, really vulnerable on stage. I think maybe because it's not our first time putting music out, you just start to accept the fact that they are just a capture of one thing, and that it was a very specific thing at the time, but it can kind of evolve in meaning, and you can lean into different parts of the same song in order for it to feel kind of comfy and all right to sing and play. It might have been, yeah, like this really specific thing, but then like anything, you could feel really strongly and specifically about something, and then like 6 months later be like, yeah, that's not how I feel anymore. But if you've written about it, you just have to accept that that's what it is and play it for what it is. Yeah,
it's such an interesting dynamic. And Soft Floor, what's this song about? Where did it come from?
It's another like just kind of navigating essentially conflict with people. And it came pretty quickly, I would say. Like, lyrically, I was like quite happy with the way that this song came about. It had, I think, a variety of kind of arrangements put behind it. I think it was one of the ones that took longer arranging-wise.
Yeah, we definitely messed around with a lot of different things. Like, we'd been playing a duo, kind of like, yeah, really paired back and like finger-picked guitar. And then we ended up with this kind of big band.
Like, swing big band. Yeah. Sorry.
We got the big band to come in and play along with us for this.
Just imagining a big band, sorry.
Count Basie. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like the arrangement itself had like a lot of different versions, and this is kind of just the end point.
And we picked the Waxahachie song because I've said this almost about every person I think that I've spoken on, but I think I have probably learnt maybe the most lyrically from her music. I think there's also something about how, like, to me, it's all very, like, forthcoming, and it feels very, like, self-realised, a lot of her lyrics.
Very blunt.
And very blunt, and I definitely, that's something that I try and lean into. Like, I think the most important thing for me when writing lyrics is to just try and be as honest as possible and essentially just not think too much about how that's going to be perceived later.
Well, let's jump into it. This song is called Soft Floor. You're here on Dream State on 2SER. Don't go anywhere. Dream State on 2SER. We're listening through Beryl's brand new album, Body Break. This next track is Kill Me. I wanted to start by noting the use of strings in this track. I know you mentioned like there's lots of instrumental and like other band across the album, but the use of it in this track and then obviously the general use of it across the album, why was incorporating so many different elements so important for you when pulling this all together?
I guess it was kind of, it was a combination of like the circumstance of like the first time we played, like we mentioned before, the first time we played a lot of these songs was at Phoenix Central Park with string quartet. Strings can be like a very like evocative instrument.
It's kind of like a nice gentle instrument.
I guess a nice way to have like density in the instrumentation without having it like getting in the way of like vocals.
And you guys almost left this one off the album we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
How did you decide to bring it back, or why did you want to leave it off?
I wanted to leave it off.
Yeah.
But my two bosses, Alex and Blaine, said no. wanted to leave it off because it's like a really vulnerable song. Wrote it about having heart surgery. And then obviously Alex brought these like very gentle, beautiful string arrangements to it, which it draws a lot of attention to the lyrics. And, you know, like I'm saying kill me probably upwards of like 20 times or something on the song. It's funny, like I think lyrics, when you write them and then you bring them to other people, like they can kind of mean different things. And for me, when I wrote the lyrics, I was like, oh, it's a bit tongue in cheek. It's a bit like, it's a bit hee hee ha ha. It's a bit funny.
Hilarious. Just really an upbeat funny anthem.
Well, just not like in the, but you know, I was kind of like, it's so like I'm saying kill me so many times. It's like a bit of a joke. And then obviously like you show that to someone else, like Alex. And Alex was like, well, this is this like kind of beautiful, crushing, sad moment.
Yeah, it didn't feel too tongue-in-cheek to me, so I took it in a different direction.
Yeah, so when it brought it into the kind of that world, and then I listened to it and was like, what? But it's so intense. So curious to what people will think of this one, because it does feel a bit rogue and intense.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things where like when you're putting your music out, that can be so personal, like you don't know how people are going to interpret it. And it was funny how that kind of happened within the band itself.
Yeah, how did you, when you wrote it initially, you said it was more, I was going to say upbeat, but I don't think that was how you were looking at it, but how did you kind of imagine it then, if like Alex has taken it in this whole new direction? Like, what were your visions initially?
It was funny, like I think I was listening to a lot of like Christian Lee Hudson at the time. I think I was thinking kind of like finger picky, like just a little kind of folky, kind of fast-paced moment. Obviously not dismissing like the situation, but it was, yeah, almost a bit like, well, haha, like I'm in this situation, like just kill me, lol, kind of.
Yeah. Kill me, lol.
Again, like when it's your own feelings and like you're living in that experience, it's probably also just easier for you to be like, yeah, well, haha, like I'm just dealing with this, so it's almost funny. And then, yeah, obviously you show other people and they're like, that doesn't really sound that funny.
And you picked a Carly Malone song to go along with this. I'm pretty sure this was you that picked this, Alex. Hey?
Yeah. So this song was like a big influence in terms of the string arrangement. There's like this song, Music for Low Quartet, is like a string quartet, but I think it has a lot of like double bass on it. And it's like really, really like kind of gritty and low sounding. That song was like a big influence in terms of the arrangement and just having like a string quartet that wasn't so like pretty sounding. It was more like kind of dark and gritty.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I'm excited to jump in. This next track is called Kill Me. You're here on 2SER. We're going through the rest of the album for the next half an hour or so, so don't go anywhere.
You won't stop me from dying, but I think you might be trying.
The ninth track on the album is the one we're about to get into. I wanted to also talk about the album as a whole. The title, obviously, as we've been saying, is Body Break. How did you land on this title?
Convenient timing. It's a lyric in the next song. It was also, the last album was a lyric in a song.
Yeah, it was like a very analytical process. So we like listed all of the lyrics on the album and then tried to find something that was
You say we.
Yeah, I sat there with like a big document on my computer and I was like,
which
lyrics kind of sum up the album but also like sound nice?
It also, yeah, it kind of felt like it did encapsulate a lot of the like, essentially just the way that stress and conflict and any sort of like physical illness can make your body feel a bit rough, essentially. Yeah.
And the cover, was that you guys' yours arms?
Yeah.
It's our arms. In the cast, right?
Yeah, fake cast that I made with a water bottle and some glue and tape.
Yeah, made of water bottles.
Yeah.
Alex is very artsy, crafty. Yeah. Just a crafty girl.
My arts and craft project.
Yeah. And Drita, our photographer.
Yeah,
did the photo.
Cool.
I mean, she's done like all the visuals across like album art and pictures and.
Yeah, and also drew the text on our arms.
Yeah.
That's cool. And you've picked Samitsky again to go along with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Who picked this track?
I did.
Oh, yeah. Walk me through.
I just like this song. Yeah. And it kind of felt like it had a similar feeling to Soapy Overkill. It's kind of like a more like grindy, drivey.
Yeah, we wanted this song to be a bit like grungy or something. I think because it has that like underlying like Catholic backdrop type of lyricism. We were like a little grungy, a little angsty.
A bit self-hating, yeah.
Just a little sprinkle of self-loathing.
Yeah.
I think that we also wanted to be a little intentional with having songs. Just some songs feel, I don't think upbeat is the right word at all. But like a little bit lifted maybe, even if that's just like a little bit more rhythmically driven, not just ballads.
Mm.
And I think this was one of those songs for us.
Yeah, this is our rock and roll moment.
Period. That's what we said. We were calling it our rock song.
But we're lying to ourselves.
People can decide. People can text in and say, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, you text in 0468441073. This next song is a rock song. This next song is Barrel Wheels a rock song. This is Soapy Overkill. You're here on 2SER. This next track we're going to look at is called I Don't Think I Should. Guys, where did this song come from? What don't you think you should?
What don't we think?
Mm.
It was just like a self-reflective thinking about like mental illness, you know, having maybe a slight tendency to be a bit of a dark cloud occasionally, or maybe just a tendency to be a bit of a cynical person. And I think that, you know, if you're just thinking about yourself can be fine. But it was thinking about how that can affect other people and how, like, your general air of cynicism and jadedness can sometimes perhaps influence other people negatively.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this one I think was one of the ones that kind of came to life in the string arrangements at Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And we kept it pretty similar.
Yeah, pretty much the same. The only thing we really added was adding baritone guitar. Yeah.
Lots of baritone guitar in this album.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to mention you've been hosting for the last couple of months a gig series called the Keepsake Series.
Mm-hmm.
How did this concept come together?
We wanted to have essentially a series running through the year kind of leading up to the album. Like generally we're like a trinket band. We love trinkets.
That's such an interesting, I love that, a trinket band.
Yeah, like we love like the visuals of trinkets and like I think that maybe it's because a lot of the imagery as well, we take a lot of our lyrics quite literally when we go and decide on visuals. And so we basically were talking about how trinkets are kind of like little keepsakes and then what if we just made that into like the keepsake is an event throughout the year that you kind of take as a little memory of the gig,
a
little souvenir. And also because we just really wanted to bring together a lot of our like friends that also play music. When you're a band playing in a local scene, like so much of your influence comes from like the people around you. And so I think it's been really nice putting on those events, you know, essentially like showing to audiences who we're influenced by and who we're making music alongside and like, yeah.
You recently had a listening party
for
the album. How did that all go?
It was a bit strange for us having to listen to the album. It was nice to, I think, because we've got one more Keepsake series, the final, the end, for the album launch on the 8th of November. So it was nice. And I think it was, it was nice to have that. Maybe before we played all the songs live, we had a very small, like, intimate group of people that all just listened. We ate lots of good food, thanks to Lindsay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bread looked really good.
Lindsay's a great musician, Abby Lindsay, and a great baker.
Yeah.
Just like, absolutely.
I love my weekends, the Instagram stories with all the bread and, like, the stuff that they're making. I'm like, oh.
They're so talented.
Also had great music from a bunch of friends of ours. We had Wishfish and Sarah Levins and Jerome Blase all play. So we listened to the album, which was really beautiful.
Yeah, because also they've been, like, really influential as well in that, like, the amount of, like, back and forth that we have with, like, Jerome and Sarah that are like, hey, what do you think we should do? What do you think about this song? It was nice to have them play just to be like, yeah, they're also really, like, important to.
Yeah.
Yeah. How we've, like, navigated the year of releasing and stuff.
Yeah, is this, like, in terms of, like, having this collaborative approach with other musicians kind of around Sydney, is this something you guys have always done, or is it kind of, like, been fleshed out by these relationships you've kind of developed?
I definitely think it's fleshed out with, like, the longer that you're in a, like, music scene, you just meet more people and you, I think also just get, like, more comfortable with people as friends, so you're, like, more comfortable asking them what you think might be a stupid question. Because, you know, I think a lot of us collectively, like, often don't know what we're doing, like, with releasing or, like, yeah, like, how to do music. Mm. So having peers to literally just send messages to and be like,
is this a bad idea?
Is this a bad idea? Like, should we do it this way? Like, should we put on this type of gig? Or, like, it's literally just, like, little things like that.
Yeah. Because there's not really anyone kind of telling us what, how we should go about things.
That's actually so interesting. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah,
you just kind of just, like, drop in and figure it out.
It's like everyone's, we're all just trying to kind of fumbling and trying to make it look like we know what's going on from the outside.
And we'll talk about the track that you picked to go alongside, I Don't Think I Should. Walk me through who picked this song.
I picked this song. It's Obama's by Goodwill. Goodwill's a New Zealand artist. And I'm just a big fan. Shock. Unlike all the other people that I added to the list. No, I remember listening to this song specifically and just, but I think with a lot of his music, like, I really love the production. I love the arranging. This song in particular felt, just, like, not very dense, very intentional. And I think this is, like, we've kind of said this a lot in this interview, but it's, like, I think we really wanted this album to feel pretty intentional, not like we did too much. We didn't kind of overdo it. And he was definitely an artist at the time that I was listening to that I was like, oh, this is a direction that I really like.
There's, like, a lot of subtleties in, like, the arrangement as well. Like, there's kind of these background guitar textures and stuff in the song which you can't really hear unless you're listening out for them. I feel like we kind of wanted to have it,
yeah, it's like adding parts that you don't hear almost as parts,
yeah,
because you're like, oh, it's just there doing its thing. If you took it away, you'd notice, but when it's there, it's just giving a little bit of a lift or something. But you can't necessarily, like, point it out.
Okay, great. Well, this is I Don't Think I Should by, you'll never guess who that's by. Bye, Beryl. Don't go anywhere. We've got the last song coming up very soon. You're on to SCR.
On the street, in the car, you said, not everyone's like you. Everyone doesn't always think everything's about to fall through. And I felt that in my chest. And I showed it on my face.
We're on the last track of the album, Body Break by Beryl. Guys, thank you so much for all your time today.
Thank you.
It's been so lovely to chat to you. Yeah. This is the closing track of the album. How did you know that this was the right track to kind of wrap this all up?
I do feel like we liked the irony of the song is a little bit about kind of wanting to, like, not pursue music. I don't know how else to put that.
I feel like
that came out of my mouth and I was like, not quite the right words.
I feel like it's about kind of being perceived for like writing personal songs and how that kind of sucks.
It was like a little bit tongue in cheek to be like finishing an album, which is all about your feelings, with a song that's kind of like, maybe I don't want to write about my feelings and be perceived anymore. But I think it was kind of, in a way, we just thought it was a bit funny to end it in that way and a nice way to close the chapter. And I guess the other thing is that it feels kind of cathartic in that it's like a nice slow burn kind of build. And then it taps out.
Yeah.
Which felt like also very, very a trick that I feel like we do a lot, which is a buildy outro.
Love a build.
And then a hey bye.
And as you mentioned before, as part of the Keepsake series, you're playing that final show. What can people expect if they head along to that?
It's a secret location.
It's going to be on a rooftop.
It's going to be on a rooftop.
Secret rooftop.
Secret
rooftop. In Marrickville. To sell me. That's all we can say about the location.
And then there'll be strings, a little bit of a a nod to the early arrangements, but we'll also be playing with our band.
Yeah, so we're going to be playing with the band.
Yeah, full band and strings. Can we say the supports? I feel like we can. It'll be Amber Rose and Jenna Stone.
Oh, love.
We both love.
That's so exciting. I personally can't wait. The rooftop, immediately oversold.
Yeah, we're hoping for maximum drama.
Yeah, pouring rain.
If it rains, it's over.
And you've picked this last song by Laura Marling and Flight. I love this song. I was so excited when I saw it. How do you think they tie together?
We actually kind of didn't choose this song. Blaine picked this song. Producer chose this song, but we all kind of had listened to it independently.
Yeah, it's such a good song.
The song was like fairly different. It was really bizarre when we brought it in.
Bit of a funky moment.
Really?
It was like there was like a funky bass part. It was all over the place.
Wow. We did too much.
And then thankfully Blaine pulled us into line with this one. We had like a big...
Blaine was like, this won't do.
This can't happen.
Yeah. We had a kind of like a hard cut in the middle of the song. Then Blaine like... kind of was like, have you both heard this song? We all had listened to it and it was like, we just wanted to emulate the big build that kind of gradually happens over the whole song.
Yeah, I feel like it was a good reference song arrangement wise. And it was, I think, it was a funny song to do because it started in a totally different place. And then Blaine, which is what's so good about working with other people, was like, I think you need to scrap the idea that you have and just like have another crack at it.
Try again.
And then we did that. And then it did end up being, I feel like arrangement wise, it's definitely one of my favorites. Like I like where it ended up, but it definitely ended up there because of like a collaborative effort in a studio and having Blaine be like, I think you can do better.
Yeah.
Write it in, guys.
Yeah.
I'd be so interested to hear the initial one. I'm like imagining like
we can send it to you.
Yeah.
You'll be like, shit, not for airplay. No one needs that.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It's not everyone.
Well, guys, that's all the songs. Congratulations on such a beautiful, beautiful album.
Thank you.
It's truly, truly great. And for spending so much time hanging out this morning. It was lovely to get a real peek behind the curtain with all of these songs. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, of course.
Straight punch to the